You know, when you read national headlines about the real estate market lately, it really feels like you're reading a weather report for the entire globe.
Right. Yeah, it's just way too broad to actually be useful.
Exactly. Like you see these massive sweeping statements like buyer leverage is returning or the market is softening. And you might sit there thinking, oh, great, I can finally take my time, browse a little, negotiate a sweet deal. But then you actually step out your front door, try to buy a house in your specific neighborhood, and suddenly it feels like you're standing in a Category 4 hurricane that the national forecasters just completely missed.
Well, I mean, that's the danger of relying on averages,
Yeah.
right? Looking at national housing data to guide your local home purchase is, it's kind of like looking at the average speed of traffic on a massive highway to decide if it's safe to cross on foot.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a great way to put it.
Because you might see an average speed of 25 miles per hour,
Yeah.
completely ignoring the fact that the left lane is doing 90 and the right lane is just entirely park.
Totally. So today, we're pulling you out of that national traffic jam and zooming in on a very specific, incredibly fascinating data set. We've got an August 2026 real estate market breakdown from Teresa Overcash.
Yeah, and she's a broker with 30 years in experience on the ground in the Triad area of North Carolina. So we're talking Winston-Salem, Greensboro, High Point, Kernersville.
Right. And our mission today for this deep dive is to demystify what is actually happening in the current real estate landscape so you can master two absolutely critical skills. First, how to strategically use due diligence fees without, risking your life savings.
Scintilla, North Carolina.
And second, how to successfully negotiate closing costs. Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the biggest illusion in the market right now. Teresa calls it the two-lane market.
Yeah, this concept completely reframes how we think about a market that's supposedly, slowing down.
Yeah.
The Triad market didn't just politely hit the brakes across the board.
It fractured.
Exactly. It split perfectly into two distinct realities, and the only thing determining which reality you live in is your price band.
Which is just wild to think about. I mean, it's the same city, the exact same week, but you are dealing with two completely different economic ecosystems.
So let's look at the actual numbers. If your budget puts you in lane one, which is homes priced under $500,000, you are in a fierce, unapologetic seller's market.
Like, how fierce are we talking?
Well, move-in-ready homes in this bracket are selling in 12 to 21 days, and the sale-to-list ratio is sitting at 98 to 99% right now.
Wow. And I saw in the data that if you drop down to the under $300,000 mark, it's even faster.
Oh, yeah, those homes are vanishing in 12 to 18 days.
We should probably clarify what that sale-to-list ratio actually means for someone's wallet, too. Because if a house is listed for, say, $400,000, a 99% ratio means buyers are paying almost exactly the asking price, if not more.
Right. There are absolutely no massive discounts happening here.
None. You're paying full price and you're doing it in less than 3 weeks.
But then you look at lane two. Lane two is everything above $625,000. And the moment you cross that threshold, the power dynamic just completely flips.
You're suddenly in a buyer's market.
Exactly. Homes are sitting for 60 to 90 days. The sale-to-list ratio drops below 98%. And here's the real kicker. Nearly 30% of the listings in this higher price bracket end up taking a price cut before they even get to the closing table.
It's literally like driving on a highway where the right lane is a bumper-to-bumper NASCAR race. You know, you're trading paint, everyone is redlining their engines, just trying to squeeze in.
Yep.
But the left lane is a casual Sunday scenic drive. People are taking their time, rolling the windows down.
And that's why stretching your budget changes the entire geometry of how you shop. Say you're looking at a house for $480,000 and you consider bumping your search up to $640,000.
You're not just buying a bigger kitchen or an extra bedroom at that point.
No, you are entirely flipping the power dynamic of the negotiation. You're walking out of that NASCAR lane where you have zero leverage and stepping into the scenic lane where the seller is actually sweating and you can ask for concessions.
But wait, what happens if you find yourself stuck right between those two lanes? Like, you're not quite in NASCAR, but you aren't on the scenic route either.
Right, so that $500,000 to $625,000 range is what Teresa calls the sweet spot. It basically functions as a balanced transition zone.
Okay, so how long are those houses sitting?
Homes here take about 35 to 55 days to sell, so you're just barely stepping into balanced territory, and sellers are noticeably more flexible than they would have been 18 months ago. But it's not a complete free-for-all for buyers yet.
Interesting. But you know, this raises a giant question in my mind regarding the overall economy, because we hear constantly about affordability pressures, right?
Oh, sure. Inflation, grocery prices.
Yeah. We hear about local buyers feeling the pinch. So why on earth is lane one, that under $500,000 bracket, moving so incredibly fast if local buyers are struggling to make ends meet? Like, who is buying all these houses at NASCAR speed?
Well, the buyers driving this frenzy aren't necessarily local Triad residents competing against each other. The pressure is actually coming from high-quality, out-of-state relocation buyers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, we are seeing a massive influx of people flocking to the Triad from places like Florida, New York, New Jersey, coastal California, and northern Virginia.
They're following the jobs, I assume.
Exactly. They're following major corporate expansions. The Triad is currently anchoring some massive employers. Like, you've got Boom Supersonic bringing over 2,000 engineering jobs to the PTI airport in Greensboro by 2030.
Right, the airplane manufacturer.
Yep. And you have the Toyota battery manufacturing plant in Liberty down in Randolph County, promising 5,100 jobs by 2027.
That is a lot of jobs.
It's huge. And on top of manufacturing, the healthcare anchors are expanding aggressively. Atrium Health and Wake Forest Baptist in Winston-Salem are adding over 1,200 new positions between 2025 and 2027.
So it's just a wave of employment.
Yeah, you combine that with steady expansions from Cone Health and Novant, along with Truist Financial's corporate anchor in Winston-Salem, and you have just a perfect storm for housing demand.
Wait, hold on, though. I hear, 5,000 jobs by 2027 or 2,000 engineering jobs by 2030, and my skeptical radar immediately goes off.
Yeah.
Because we have all seen corporate press releases and promises on a whiteboard that never actually materialize. Are these actual human beings with paychecks buying houses in the Triad right now, or is this just speculative hype?
No, it is the absolute right thing to question, especially when dealing with real estate projections. But the data here is concrete. Like, Boom's Superfactory isn't just a 3D rendering on a website anymore. The facility is physically under construction at PTI.
Okay, so the dirt is actually moving.
Exactly. And Toyota has already broken ground in Liberty, and they're actively recruiting shift managers today. So these aren't speculative numbers a decade out. These are credit-strong buyers who are moving their families right now.
And because they're moving across the country to a totally new environment, I'm assuming they're playing it a bit safe with their initial housing budgets.
Yes. That is the crucial mechanism driving the two-lane market.
Yeah.
Even though many of these relocating buyers have the capital from, selling a home in New York or California to easily buy in lane two, they are shopping cautiously in lane one.
Because they don't know the area yet.
Right. They want to stay under $500,000 as they get the lay of the land in a new state. They don't want to overextend before they really know the neighborhoods.
Which creates a massive, relentless tailwind for sellers in that lower bracket.
Exactly. The local buyers are suddenly forced to compete with out-of-state money that has a very firm deadline to relocate for a new job.
Wow. So if you are a local buyer trying to compete in that brutal sub-$500,000 market, how do you actually win the bid?
That is the million-dollar question.
Right. Which brings us to arguably the most terrifying weapon in North Carolina real estate and the first major skill we want to help you master today in this deep dive, the due diligence fee.
Oh, yeah. It is a tool entirely unique to North Carolina.
Yeah.
And understanding how to wield it basically dictates your entire contract strategy.
Let's just pause for a second and think about the sheer anxiety of how this law works for a buyer. Because in North Carolina, buyers pay a non-refundable fee directly to the seller the absolute moment the contract is signed.
Right. Not at closing. At signing.
You are essentially trading raw cash for a specified window of time to do all your inspections. And during that window, you can walk away for any reason, a bad roof, a weird smell, or just cold feet. But if you do walk away, you do not get a single penny of that due diligence feedback.
And we really have to draw a hard line here between due diligence and earnest money, because people get them confused all the time.
Yeah, explain the difference.
So earnest money sits safely in a trust account. If you terminate the contract during your inspection period, you generally get your earnest money back.
Okay.
The due diligence fee, however, goes straight into the seller's personal checking account. Once that check clears, which is usually the next day, it is theirs to keep forever. Whatever amount you write on that line is exactly the penalty you pay if you terminate the contract.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because looking at Teresa's data, I am completely lost on one specific trend.
Okay, what is it?
Well, Logic dictates that the more expensive the house, the higher the due diligence fee should be, right? Like, a $1 million house should demand a massive check just to take it off the market, while a starter home should require a smaller check.
You would think so, yeah.
But the data shows the exact opposite. The median due diligence fee peaks at $7,700, right in that sweet spot we mentioned, the $500,000 to $625,000 band. But once you cross over $850,000, the median fee actually drops all the way down to $4,000. I even saw some luxury contracts have a $0 due diligence fees. How on earth does a $1 million house require less upfront skin in the game than a starter home?
Because what you are seeing is the reality of the two-lane market manifesting directly in the contract terms. It all comes down to leverage.
Oh, right.
The amount you write for that fee depends entirely on which lane you are driving in, not just the raw price of the house.
So walk us through how that plays out on the ground. Like, if I'm a buyer today.
Sure. So if your budget puts you in lane one under $500,000, you are forced to use the due diligence fee offensively.
Yeah.
You are in that NASCAR race. You have to make your offer stand out against, three other out-of-state buyers.
Right. You need to grab the seller's attention.
Exactly. The median fee for homes under $300,000 is about $1,500. But between $300,000 and $500,000, it jumps up to $4,500.
That's a lot of non-refundable cash.
It is. Because you are using that check to scream to the seller, "I am serious. I have significant skin in the game, and I am not going to blow up this deal over a squeaky door hinge or an old HVAC system."
You are literally buying their trust.
Yes, but the moment you enter lane two, above $625,000, the buyers hold the cards. The houses are sitting empty for 2 months. The sellers are getting anxious.
So you don't need to yell as loud.
Right. In this scenario, you use a much smaller fee, maybe $3,000 to $6,000. If you find a property that has been sitting for 90 days, you might even write a $0 due diligence fee.
Because the seller's just desperate for a deal.
Yeah, they're just so relieved to finally have a real viable offer on the table that they accept it without demanding a massive, terrifying, non-refundable check up front.
Which brings up a very stark warning from Teresa in the source material. She points out that if your real estate agent tells you that you need to put down a $15,000 due diligence fee for a $700,000 house in 2026, you need to fire them or get a second opinion immediately.
Oh, it is a phenomenal piece of advice,
Yeah.
honestly, because writing a $15,000 check would have been perfectly standard back in 2022, when money was practically free, interest rates were rock bottom, and everything was flying off the shelves.
Right, the Wild West days.
Exactly. But in 2026, in that higher price band, giving a seller that kind of non-refundable cash is completely out of touch with the current leverage dynamics. You are giving away thousands of dollars of your own leverage for absolutely no strategic reason.
Okay, so let's say you've survived the NASCAR lane, you figured out your due diligence strategy, your check cleared, and you are officially under contract. The battle isn't over yet.
Not even close.
Right, because now you have to make it to the closing table. Which brings us to the second major focus of our deep dive, the playbook for negotiating closing costs.
And preparation is everything when it comes to the closing table. You really can't start strategizing your closing costs on the day you write the offer.
So Teresa introduces this framework for readiness called the 3-3-3 rule.
Yeah, I love this
It's
one.
so practical. It stands for 3 months of financial reserves, 3 months of pre-approval discipline, and three real-world showings before you ever put pen to paper on an offer.
The mechanics behind that rule are what keep deals from falling apart at the very last second.
How so?
Well, the 3 months of reserves ensures you aren't going to panic and pull out of the deal if an appraisal comes in slightly low or, the inspection reveals a repair you have to pay for out of pocket.
Right. And the showings.
The three real showings ensure you actually know what the market looks and feels like. Like, the difference between a house that smells freshly painted and one that smells like a damp basement before you commit serious capital.
Yeah.
And what about that 3 months of pre-approval discipline? Because I see how reserves help, but how does a lack of discipline actually blow up a deal?
Oh, this happens all the time. Let's say you get pre-approved for a mortgage, you go under contract, and you're feeling great.
Celebrating already.
Right. But then, 2 weeks before closing, you decide to go finance a new car with a $400 monthly payment because you want something nice for the new driveway.
Oh, no.
Yes. The moment you do that, the bank recalculates your monthly debts. Suddenly, your debt-to-income ratio spikes above their allowable limit. You no longer qualify for the mortgage. The deal is dead.
Just like that.
Just like that. And because you are past the point of no return, you lose that non-refundable due diligence fee we just talked about. It's a catastrophic domino effect caused by a single impulse purchase.
Wow. Okay, so you follow the 333 rule to the letter. Your finances are locked down. How does your strategy for negotiating closing costs change based on our two lanes?
It is a night and day difference. If you are shopping under $500,000 in lane one, the golden rule is do not ask for closing cost help unless you have a highly specific, unavoidable reason.
Because asking the seller to pay your closing costs just lowers their net profit, which makes your offer look incredibly weak compared to the relocation buyer who didn't ask for a dime.
Exactly. In lane one, speed and friction are your main variables. You tour a house, and if it fits, you offer at or slightly above list price within 24 hours.
You have to move fast.
You write incredibly clean paperwork. You don't include complicated contingencies, and you certainly don't ask the seller to buy down your interest rate. The buyers who win in lane one are the ones who make the transaction as frictionless and inevitable as possible for the seller.
But if we jump over to lane two...
Above $625,000, you need to aggressively negotiate. Remember the data we talked about earlier. 30% of these listings are already taking price cuts just to get attention. So you start your initial offer 5 to 8% below the list price. You specifically ask for seller-paid closing costs in the contract. You ask for repair credits.
Just throw it all in there.
Basically, yeah. You take the home inspection very seriously, and you negotiate every single questionable item that comes up. And you aren't being rude or overly aggressive when you do this. You are simply reacting mathematically to a market that has already softened. The seller expects the negotiation.
Now, for anyone looking to negotiate heavily, regardless of what lane they're in, the data holds one brilliant pro tip. It's called the 40-day trick.
Yes. This is where you can find genuine value right now.
So how does it work?
If you want a seller to pay your closing costs, you specifically target homes that have been sitting on the market for 40 days or more.
And are there a lot of those?
In Guilford and Forsyth counties right now, that represents roughly 35% of the total available inventory.
So what does this all mean? I mean, targeting that 40-day mark is kind of like finding the discounted bakery shelf at the end of the day. The bread is still perfectly good. There's absolutely nothing structurally wrong with the product, but the seller has missed the morning rush. They've missed the peak summer buying window.
Mm-hmm.
They tested the market at a premium price, realized they overshot, and now they're staring at stale inventory and are finally ready to make a deal.
That's a perfect analogy because at day one, a seller is full of hope, right? They're convinced their house is special and worth top dollar.
Of course they are. It's their home.
Right. But by day 40, the reality is set in. They are staring at an empty calendar, listening to their agent explain why they aren't getting any weekend showings.
And that is the exact moment you step in.
You offer to take the house off their hands, but you make it clear that they're going to cover your closing costs to make the math work. Suddenly, that stubborn seller is highly motivated to say yes.
It's all about finding the motivated seller rather than trying to force a stubborn day one seller to bend to your will. You know, when you look at the real estate market through this lens, it isn't just one big, intimidating blob of data.
No, not at all.
It is a highly specific micro game of leverage.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's about knowing exactly which lane your budget puts you in and adjusting every single dial of your strategy, your due diligence fee, your closing cost requests, your timeline to match the reality of that specific lane.
So you now have a distinct toolkit. You know why the under $500,000 market is moving at light speed? Because of relocation buyers from Toyota and Boom Supersonic?
Yeah.
You know how to wield the North Carolina due diligence fee as an offensive weapon in lane one or pull it back as a protective shield in lane two?
Exactly.
And you know exactly when to push for closing costs by hunting for those 40-day listings.
Now, as we wrap up, we really have to leave you with one final thought drawn directly from Teresa's 30 years of market cycles.
Right. There is a very common, very dangerous mindset out there right now for people who are feeling hesitant about affordability.
Yeah, they think, I'll just sit on the sidelines, I'll wait for interest rates to drop a bit, and then I'll jump in and buy.
Which, honestly, feels like the smart, safe play. You wait for the math to get a little friendlier on your monthly payment.
It feels logical, sure. But Teresa points out the fatal flaw in that logic. Using the old industry adage, marry the house, update the rate.
Ah, I've heard that one.
Waiting for rates to drop is almost always a losing trade in the triad. Because every time interest rates drop by even 25 basis points, which is just a quarter of a percentage point, it triggers an immediate psychological surge of buyers who've been waiting on the sidelines just like you.
Oh, wow. So all that pent-up demand just unleashes on the market at the exact same time?
Exactly. And what happens when a flood of new buyers enters a market that already has tight inventory? Prices get pushed up immediately.
Supply and demand.
Right. And all of that precious negotiation room we just spent this entire time talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to ask for closing costs, the ability to write a smaller due diligence fee, it completely vanishes overnight.
The discounted bakery shelf is suddenly swarmed, and the baker raises the prices back up.
Spot on. So if every single buyer is waiting on the sidelines for the exact same rate cut, the real question isn't whether you will be able to afford the house when rates drop.
It's whether you'll even be able to get a house at all.
The question is, will you even be able to win the bidding war to get to the closing table? You might be trading a slightly higher monthly payment today for the absolute inability to buy a home tomorrow.
What an incredible thought to end on. I mean, by waiting for a marginally better interest rate, or a rate you could theoretically just refinance into later anyway, you might be surrendering your ability to negotiate the price, the closing costs, and the due diligence fee right now.
Yeah. You are trading structural leverage for a temporary rate.
That is exactly why you have to look past the national headlines and deeply understand the reality on the ground. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. Keep exploring, keep questioning the data, and most importantly, before you write an offer, make sure you know exactly which lane you're driving in. Until next time.